from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, longtime San Francisco Chronicle columnist C.W. Nevius is leaving the paper. For 36 years, Nevius has informed, entertained, and at times infuriated Bay Area residents, particularly the city's liberal politicians and activists. We talk with Nevius about his journalism career and what it's like to get so much hate mail from San Francisco progressives. Join us after this news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. 40 years ago, Chuck Nevius was an English teacher who quit his job to cover high school sports for a small Colorado paper. He then landed at the San Francisco Chronicle, first as a sports writer and then as the Metro columnist, where he became a frequent critic to San Francisco's progressive politicians and activists, particularly for his stances on the homeless. In his 36 years with the paper, Nevius has covered 8 Olympic Games, rode the Straight Talk Express with John McCain during his first presidential bid. He's also co-written Splash It about building the Giants' waterfront stadium and wrote the book Crouching Father, Hidden Toddler, a Zen guide for new dads. Hello, Chuck Nevius.
Hello.
And today is...
Today actually is Chuck Nevius Day
today,
in San Francisco.
Oh, by proclamation of the city.
By proclamation of Mayor Edwin Lee. There may have been a party last night, and at that party, a proclamation was read that said that it is Chuck Nevius Day. So I just want to say, if you're having any problems in the city today, just give me a call. I'll be happy to take care of them. And by the way, I'll be parking wherever I want.
And you have this proclamation with you. Can you read us a little bit?
Well, it's so flattering. You know, it's just one accolade after another. It says, whereas, as a Metro columnist writing almost exclusively about City Hall, Chuck Nevius has developed a reputation by some as their third favorite columnist. So you just can't get any better than that. It's so nice.
Were you surprised to get this proclamation?
I was surprised by all of it. We had a party last night at Mission Rock Resort, and right before it happened, my wife and I walked down on the deck, and I said, people are going to come. Don't you think there'll be some people here, right? And she said, of course there will. And just from start to finish, I mean, it was just one person, and people remarked on, and it was a very eclectic group. Because a lot of City Hall, a lot of Chronicle, a lot of people over the years, and it was kind of like going to your own funeral. Really, is what it was like. It was just wonderful. I was so overwhelmed.
Why are you leaving now?
Well, I can't believe you're asking me that, but you're now the 150th person. I'm 66 years old, so I am at the point where I could probably do this for another 4 years, and that would be fine. But I've done this, and I would like you. What you read in the introduction of me coming out from a small newspaper in Colorado Springs, coming to San Francisco, didn't know a soul, didn't know anybody at all. I was so naive about California. I thought we'd drive down to Los Angeles for lunch and come back. I mean, I had no clue. And yet, when I look back on it, I think that was one of the most exciting times of my life. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know where I was going to go. And if there's ever a time in your life when you have the opportunity to do something like that, for me, this would be that time. And I thought I'd just give it a try.
Were you feeling a little burned out? I mean, in your farewell column, you mentioned as one of the reasons Monday morning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Talk about what you meant by that.
Well, I think that one of the things that obsesses reporters and writers and probably doesn't concern the readers at all is deadlines. And I knew I wrote 3 columns a week. And I would sometimes have people say to me, is that all you write? You write 3 times a week? Is that all you do? And I would always say, why don't you give it a try for about 2 weeks and then come back and see what you think? And Monday morning, when I came in on Monday morning, the deal is with those columns, every other day at 2:30, I had to turn in a column, whether something had happened or whether I had an idea or whether I didn't. And I mean, that's the difference in being a columnist, is you have a day, you have a time, and you're going to have to deliver at that moment. And Monday was the day that I came in most often at 8:30 in the morning, and really didn't know what I was going to write. And within that period of time, between 8:30 and 2:30, I was going to have to come up with an idea, do interviews, put it together, and hopefully make it something that I'd be proud of.
And you're right. That really is the part of it that I think is hard for people to understand, is that you can't just report what's happening, right? I mean, we can talk about and report what's happening in the news. You actually have to take what's happening in the news and find some kind of original angle to it and have a voice in terms of how you're communicating that particular angle.
Right. And that's the theory, that there's some texture and some undercurrent to it. And a lot of that is obviously experience. You've been there. You've done it. You've seen what's going on. And you have a historical context to put it in. But yes, that's the thing, is what more am I going to tell you other than what just happened? What I need implications. And it's an honor to be able to do it. I mean, it's an honor to have the opportunity to do it, but it isn't easy.
And in your time as a columnist, you have definitely written some controversial articles, particularly and especially in the last year, I think, about the homeless in San Francisco.
Yes, I have. I think that's the issue in San Francisco, that it not only divides us, but it unites us, in that we're all so concerned about what we can do about this homeless situation. And what I have tried to say is we have to be somewhat realistic about it. At this point, every person who comes into San Francisco and sits down on the sidewalk has become San Francisco's problem. San Francisco needs to find them a place to live. We need to feed them. We need to take care of them. And I'm not sure we can sustain that. If every single person that comes to San Francisco becomes San Francisco's problem, I think it's bigger than that. And I've gotten a certain amount of heat for that. That's exactly right.
You mentioned in your column that Jennifer Friedenbach, who heads the Coalition on Homeless, is probably or has done a happy dance. I think, did she even send you a video?
She sent me a video of her doing a happy dance. So that's the great thing, is that Jennifer does have a sense of humor. And I was joking when I said I was coming into Forum today. I said, this will be one of the first times I've appeared without Jennifer Friedenbach on the other side of the table. It's where we debate things back and forth. So I don't doubt anybody's sense of honor and purpose that they want to do those things. But I do question at times the way they go about it. And I would say, for a group that has been founded on the idea of compassion to the unfortunate, often they are very mean-spirited. And I don't mind that directed at me. I mean, that's part of the job. It's part of the, if you're going to be a columnist, that's the way it goes. But I've had members of my family have actually been kind of trolled. And I just think that goes beyond the pale. I mean, this is a group which, again, I don't doubt their motives. I don't doubt anything they're doing. But they haven't been elected or appointed. They're concerned citizens. And they're showing up at Board of Supervisors meetings and committee meetings and so forth. And they're saying, you know, we need to do something else. And that's fine. But I say to them, and I have said to them, and I have said to Jennifer, okay, so what's your suggestion? Okay, I know you don't like what we're doing. But the city of San Francisco is spending hundreds of millions of dollars to work on this. And this is really a difficult problem.
About $240
million. $240 million and going up for homeless services. And I see, if you take someone like Jeff Kaczynski, who's the new appointee to homelessness, Sam Dodge, who did it before, I don't know two people who are more concerned and more involved in helping the homeless than those two people. And they are getting a lot of criticism and abuse. I feel like the city does a lot, and the result is you're not doing enough. Whatever it is, you're not doing enough.
Well, if trolling goes beyond the pale, right, do you think, though, that there is fair criticism in the fact that you've shown lack of empathy for the homeless issue in the past, or for the homeless trying living on the street in a city where there aren't enough beds, aren't enough shelter spaces for folks?
Right. And I think that's a discussion to have. I don't think the shelter system works at all. I mean, I think that's a terrible system. It starts with rousting people out early in the morning and sending them back out on the sidewalk, and then finding out that they have to go back and stand in line from like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a system that's designed to keep people on the street and not doing something productive. So I'm happy to talk about that. But I do think that it is also not to be ignored that there are people who have tent encampments in their neighborhood who are walking by hypodermic needles on the sidewalk. And I don't think that's hyperbole. I mean, I think that there's a group of people, of homeless people in those tents that are a very difficult group to deal with. And I think that needs to be said, as well as we need to do something with the homeless.
Over your 36-year career, what are the columns that you think really struck a nerve with people, hit a chord with people? What are the stories in the city that really stand out to you?
Well,
we've mentioned the homeless, so something.
Yeah, I think those the homeless columns, I think, and I think our homeless coverage, which I think is excellent at the Chronicle, if I could just say so, is more thematic. I feel like that's something. This is a topic we all know. We need to do something with that. We're attacking it on a regular basis. We're looking at it from all sides. So I think that's more thematic. But individual columns, most often, the columns that people remarked on and mentioned were the ones where I kind of took a chance. You know, I kind of wrote something about my family. I wrote something about, I mean, I was talking to my son the other day, and he was saying, he's got a great job. I won't say where he works, but he has a great job. And he said, boy, we've got this this really smart boss. And I go into these meetings, and she really questions you. It's kind of scary, really. And I said, if your job doesn't scare you from time to time, you're in the wrong job. And those columns, when I would go off on the death of my dog, my daughter's engagement to her partner, those were not typical Metro columns. And those, I pushed the button and sent those in, and then sat back and thought to myself, you know, what have I done? I'm not really sure if this is a really good idea or not. And so often people responded to that. They responded to the column I read about the death of our dog, as silly as it sounds, is really one of my favorites. And one of my favorite reader comments of all time was this guy wrote me and said, thanks for making me cry in Starbucks. Yeah.
And remind us what you wrote, just a little bit.
My daughter wanted a dog, and we went to a rescue center, and I gave her a little lecture before we went in, and I said, we are not going to adopt a problem dog. You're not going to talk us into a dog that just needs a little more love or a little more help. We're going to be selectively ruthless, is how I put it. We're going to go in there, we're going to look at these dogs. So we go to the first cage, I put my hand in the cage, the dog comes over and puts her face in my hand, and I said, we'll take this one. And that's the dog we took, and we had her for 16 years, and it was just, she was just lovely.
We're talking with...
Kind of choked me up there.
We're talking with San Francisco Metro columnist Chuck Nevious. After 36 years, he's left the paper effective today, correct?
Chuck Nevious Day.
Chuck Nevious Day, effective today. His columns informed, entertained, and irritated Bay Area residents, particularly the city's progressive politicians and activists. But his writing also shaped public opinion and often pushed readers outside their comfort zones. Let me open the phone lines and see if folks would like to talk with Chuck Nevious. Tell us your views on his perspectives about the city, your questions about San Francisco, maybe about making a late life transition as he is. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. Post them on our website, kqed.org/forum, or on Facebook or Twitter. We're at KQED Forum. Those personal articles, in terms of when you hit your stride as a columnist, because I think it takes a while. You know, you're given this platform, right, to put a perspective on the news. And I think the initial temptation is to hold back a little bit.
That's exactly right. Yes, it is. It is. And it's knowing how to do that. I had a friend that he was also a writer for another newspaper. And someone said once, he's the hero of every story he ever tells. You know, it's always, and that's exactly the wrong way to write a personal column. You know, you have to be able to laugh at yourself. You have to be able to put yourself in the position where the reader is, maybe being a little unaware of what's going on. It's a delicate balance, but you're right. I mean, finding your stride as a columnist is really difficult. Everybody has one or two. You know, everybody's got one or two stories they tell at Christmas dinner, you know, and you get a big laugh, and that's great. But if you're going to do it on a regular basis, three times a week, four times a week, Herb Cain did it five times a week. Yeah. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You're going to have a perspective, and you're going to have a worldview that travels, that doesn't wear on people. And it's hard to find that balance. But you have to be constantly conscious of finding that balance so you don't overdo it.
Did you have a mission to try to sort of push the buttons of the left orthodoxy? Was that something,
right.
I'm being serious, actually, that you felt like was necessary in terms of trying to have political discourse that challenged?
You know, I didn't mean to laugh at the question. I was so surprised that I was a lightning rod. You know, I thought I was so sensible. And, you know, frankly, if I were in Des Moines, I'd probably be hailed as a communist. You know, I'm probably, if I wasn't in San Francisco, I'd be as liberal and left as anybody in America. But, you know, I'm in favor of same-sex marriage and marijuana legalization. And it's like, So I was surprised when that happened, that I became this lightning rod and that people would go after me and so forth. And I mean, the odd part of it is we just had a, I don't know if you saw this thing about the proclamation, the Board of Supervisors voted on it. So they had a generic proclamation that was just like, you know, after 36 years, good job, terrific. And they pass those all the time.
Right.
So they're going around quickly. Okay, we have the proclamation. Yay or nay? Yay, 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 yay. And they get to John Avalos, Supervisor John Avalos, the most progressive member, arguably, of the Board of Supervisors. And he said, no, I refuse to vote. I refuse to vote in favor of this. And then he sort of went on a little rant. I didn't really see it, but I've been told, and about how this guy doesn't deserve it and all this stuff. And then he turned off his microphone and slammed it down and said, you know, basically, screw this guy. And my thought was, wow, is that great or what? I mean, talk about publicity. I mean, if they'd passed it unopposed, who would have cared? But now I'm like the talk of City Hall. So I felt like that's an indication that you're having an impact, but you have to do it from your gut. You can't do it because you want to poke the progressives. You have to do it because, seriously, this is how I feel. I feel like this, like I said, I feel like
authenticity.
Yes, yes. I feel like that's... And you have to have a good moral compass, and hopefully that's what you're using to inform yourself is that moral compass.
I asked you earlier if you were a little burned out, and you were talking about the deadline pressures burning you out. But you were also, I mean, if judging from the comments on the columns, right? You were the target of a lot of anger or hate mail from progressive activists or progressives or even not progressives, just right. At times people who disagreed with you, and that is a lot to absorb. Did that play any role at all in maybe feeling like you were ready to move on?
No. The funny thing about that is people often say to me, wow, you really put up with, they are after you. But those are, interestingly, those are the comments in the paper which are public. So in a way, we've created a public forum. And those people, God bless them, get to say what they think about my column. But my email... My direct contact does not run nearly as negative. It's much less. So I think a lot of that is the idea that this is a public space and I'm going to post this and they're going to use me as a sort of a diving board to launch themselves off into a point of view, which is perfectly fine. But seriously, the mail I get is not anywhere near as negative as what you see on the comment boards.
Well, let's hear what our listeners want to ask you. Frank in Mill Valley. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to ask, as a departing member of the fraternity that I admire and respect, i.e. journalists, what your parting comments might be. I don't know if you listened yesterday to Michael Krasny's piece on journalism in a post-fact world, and I was alarmed at your fellow, they weren't Chronicle members, but they were journalists who are sort of saying, we're about to give up because nobody seems to care. And as a guy whose motto is from the old radio show is, freedom of the press is a flaming sword, I wonder what your take is. What would you tell your colleagues as you depart?
Good question.
Frank, thanks.
Thank you, Frank. This is the time when the old journalist says, oh boy, things have changed and everything's different. But I don't really think that's true. I think there's a huge future for journalism. And I think that to someone like Frank, I think you can see in this city that the San Francisco Chronicle moves the needle, that there are political stands, that there are cultural stands that we take that affect change in the city and beyond. And you can't beat that. I mean, I don't know. I can't tell you exactly where everybody's getting that information, but I feel like the Chronicle and news sources are able to do a lot of good things. And I think we're seeing it there. And the other thing I'd say is, we had a party last night and several of the people who came were younger journalists and they still have that passion. And the job has not changed in that sense. You're still looking for stories. You're looking for trends. You're finding people who can speak to them and you're putting it all in a coherent package. Now you may blog it, you may tweet it, you may put it on a video, but it's still the same job, which is gathering the news, reflecting on the news and giving a clear picture of what's happening.
Those aspects of it haven't changed, yes, but the appetite for more fake or more perspective-driven news is greater. And the Chronicle has felt the pressures, right, of that most papers have felt, where circulation has dropped, there's been massive layoffs. you know, you yourself are actually one of many long-timers that have recently left the paper. I'm thinking about Carla Marinucci, Henry K. Lee, Jackson Vanderbeck, and other folks who were – we took Marisa Lagos.
Right. Thanks a lot for that.
Why are so many leaving?
I think that it is transitional, and it still is. The unfortunate part of the newspaper business is it doesn't pay very well. And I think that the key to this entire thing is you cannot do this job without passion. You have to be passionate and feel like you're doing something that's important. And I think it is important. We hired – she'll be embarrassed that I am bringing this up. But we hired someone recently that she's only part-time. She works 3 days a week. She's had to find a second job to try to keep herself housed. She managed to rent one room in an apartment in the Tenderloin. She walks to work. Her hours are terrible. And when she started, she said to me after a couple of weeks, "This is my dream come true." And I thought, that's what we need. That's the kind of passion. She wants to do this. She wants to do this thing and feel like it's important. And that, I think the real key, and it's happened with us, I hope it happens with other people, is that you have to have a sense in that newsroom that everyone recognizes that what you're doing is important, and we recognize that what you're doing is rewarded, and that what you're doing is having an effect. And I think that, in some ways, compensates for the fact that it's not a great paying profession.
You're optimistic about the future of journalism?
Well, I'll tell you, the one thing that we can say, and we've gone through the circulation things and every paper's done that, but, you know, we're not making buggy whips. That SF Gate is consistently one of the top 10 news sites in the United States. We get millions of hits every day, and we just need to find a way to monetize it. I don't know what you do, but it is not as if we have a product that nobody wants. We have a product that a lot of people want. They're excited about this product. We just need to find a way to make it pay.
Well, Jordan tweets, "Nevius has been a much-needed voice of sanity around here. Thanks for all your hard work."
Well, thank you, George. I appreciate it. Ask my wife, though.
And let's hear from Jay in San Jose. Hi, Jay.
Hi there. Yeah, I just wanted to say I really champion those who bring up an opposing viewpoint in whatever the prevailing climate is. It's wonderful that there's someone there that will stand up and say, but wait a minute. Okay, so thank you for doing that. And I wanted to know what it was that you really advocate as far as the homeless problem. Have you heard of what Utah's solution was? Saw an article in NPR about that. And why would that work or not work in California?
Well, thanks, Jay. First of all, I appreciate it. Actually, we sent Kevin Fagan to Salt Lake City, and he did a long piece on the solution. And I think that's a great idea. It is a matter of scale. You know, if you have only a certain number of people, you're able to do it. You know, the problem is if you create housing for people that come to San Francisco, we house every single person right now that's homeless. And then at noon, the Greyhound bus pulls up and five more people get off. Now we have to buy, you know, it's a never-ending situation. Here's what I would say. This is my proposal. And the city is welcome to use it if they'd like. I think our problem with the homeless is we're treating everyone like they're the same person. And they're not. I would start with the severely mentally ill. I would treat them. I would go with women and children. And I would also go to the veterans, because the veterans served our country and they also have services. And I would make a concerted effort to take those three groups, take the severely mentally ill off the streets and get them into help and treatment so they take their medications. I would take care of the families and the women, and I would do the same thing with the veterans. And after that, I think we'd have to have a discussion.
We're talking with longtime San Francisco Metro columnist Chuck Nevius. He's left the Chronicle effective today. More with Chuck after the break. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking with San Francisco Chronicle Metro columnist Chuck Nevius, or I should say former now, as today he has left the paper after 36 years. His columns informed and infuriated at times Bay Area residents, particularly the city's more progressive left. And we are taking your calls and questions for Chuck Nevius about San Francisco, about his positions on the issues that are facing the city, about his transition now at the age of 66. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. Post them on our website, kqed.org/forum, or on Facebook or Twitter. Let's hear some more from our listeners. John in San Francisco. Hi, John.
Good morning. We have many problems in San Francisco, many serious problems. And the job of newspapers and newspaper columnists is to dog our government and government officials to solve these problems. The fact that the city government threw a party for Mr. Nevius upon his leaving is an indication that Mr. Nevius did not do his job, that that government was approving of his work. And if he had been doing his work, they would not be throwing a party for him. My question is this. Since Mr. Nevius moved to San Francisco, as did Herb Kane, will he now be leaving San Francisco now that he's not writing a column on San Francisco, unlike Herb Kane, who became a true San Franciscan?
John, thanks for your comments. A couple things there, Chuck, besides that question about whether you'll be leaving. I mean, do you think you shirked your duty as a columnist in terms of holding the powerful accountable? Often you have been noted as somebody who sided frequently with the mayor or with city departments. You were a fan of Ed Lee.
Right. Well, first of all, the city did not throw a party for me. My wife and I threw a party for me. And if the city would like to pick up the tab, we can discuss that. But I think we said before, Mina, I think all you can do is go with your gut. And if you're going to start triangulating and saying, okay, I haven't written a column about this yet, and I need to do more columns about this instead of this because I'm trying to balance everything out, you're going to get in trouble. All I can do is look at what's going on and make my take on it. And that to me is the job of a columnist, and that's what I've tried to do. And I find often that people who say that's not the point of view I would have taken are upset with me for not taking that point of view. And it's a no win. I'm going to have to go with what I believe. And I did. And 36 years later, here I am. What can I say?
Well, you did move from Walnut Creek to San Francisco. And in one of your columns, you suggested that the criticism that you were living in Walnut Creek and writing about San Francisco may have had some value to it, that once living here, it gave you a different perspective for your columns.
Yeah, two things. Well, for the Bay Guardian called me a conservative suburban twit, which I had on my desk for quite a while. I had that as my title. The idea that I would move to San Francisco because I was being criticized by the
that's not why you moved.
But the second thing is, you know, like many empty nesters, our kids grew up. We were in the suburbs. We ran out of soccer games to go to. There wasn't that much to do. We love the city. We had a chance to come back to the city about 7 years ago, and we did. And to your point, it has been incredibly valuable because so often I'm walking on the street and I see something and it turns out to be a column idea. I'm much more connected and I feel like this is my home. So that's yes. So answer to John, yes, we're going to stay in San Francisco.
And that has actually been something that folks have highlighted about you, is that you are a reporter first, that you frequently did just go out on the street to talk directly with people, to make direct observations, which you don't necessarily have to do as a columnist. Frequently you can, you know, pontificate
exactly.
from the sidelines.
Exactly.
What is the value of that?
Well, I think I was a reporter, you know, and that never really leaves you. If I got completely strapped for an idea and really didn't have anything, and it gets to be 11 o'clock in the morning, and I know that, again, 2:30 is looming, and I'm going to have to put in a column, I would often go out the door and walk down Market Street. And it was astonishing how often, by the time I came back, I had a column. You've got to get out of the office. You've got to get out of that newsroom. I always feel sorry for, sometimes teachers will call and say, we have a student who's really interested in journalism and he or she wants to know if they could shadow you for the day. And I kind of say, okay, they could sit next to my desk and watch me talk on the phone, because most of what we do is on the phone. And we need to be sure that that's not all that we do. We need to get out on those streets and walk up and down and see things. And it is. It's amazing how often you find I do get in trouble with my family because I'm always engaging with the waitress, because you never know when the waitress is going to have a story. There's a bartender at John's Grill that just has an amazing story. We were talking and my wife kept giving me the elbow, like, you know, you're here with me. It's just exactly the kind of thing that I think a columnist can do that keeps things fresh and gives you a real picture of the city.
Well, you live in the Mission Bay neighborhood?
Mission Bay, yep.
And so what's your reaction to the Warriors' plan, at least moving past the hurdle of the appeals process?
Well, as someone who panicked your producer because I was caught in traffic on the way over, here's a bulletin. Traffic is already bad there, you know? And I don't think that the idea that we're going to turn down basically a free arena. I mean, they're gonna pay for the entire thing. Look at Las Vegas. Look at Oakland. They're trying to put together $750 million to try to build a sports facility. The Warriors are going to build it with their own money. And I'm serious. That traffic is all over San Francisco is really going to be one of the stories of the future. But it's not because of an arena.
So you're not worried about it getting worse in your own neighborhood?
It's getting worse right now, as we speak. It's getting worse right this minute. It's going to be something we have to. The whole city of San Francisco is going to have to worry about this.
Adam in Kensington, you're on with Chuck Nevious.
Yeah, I wanted to respond to an earlier comment regarding the young woman who's working part time for the paper and has a second job and has a tiny apartment. I'm a former journalist. I worked for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for several years, was a political correspondent, and I want to take aim at this notion that journalists ourselves have, that what we really need is fire in the belly, because I think that obscures a whole bunch of other problems with the way media is run today. We can't just say, oh, we need more passionate young people to take up the charge. Yeah, we do, but we also need passionate young people who are paid and respected by management.
Adam, thanks. I think we're getting the point. Sorry, there's just a lot of background noise on your line there, but I think Chuck is getting the message. What's your response to Adam's point? It's a good one.
I think it is a good one, and I think it's important. That's the next change that I think journalism and news gathering has to make, is to realize that these are valued jobs, valued employees, and not everyone can do this. This is not one of those jobs where we'll just hire somebody from off the street and have them come in and do it. They have to be valued. And I think that's one of the things. It's kind of a tradition in the newsroom that they go through some of these kinds of things. We don't often credit and praise the people who are doing a good job, and we certainly are not paying them. Some of that is the crisis in journalism and in newsprint and newspapers, but a lot of it is also the fact that that's the tradition, and we need to stop doing that. I agree with him.
Well, Adam, thanks for raising that point. Michael in San Francisco, you're on.
I understand that artists and critics and journalists have to have the strength of their convictions, and I hear that you speak from your gut, you say, but what about speaking more from your head and your heart? I'm one of the progressives. I worked in trying to protect the California Environmental Quality Act from being gutted because the Planning Commission had appointed Scott Wiener to try to get rid of the appeals that drove them crazy, so citizens would not have any right to hear about or do anything about developments that could affect their lives, from small ones where some irritating neighbor might try to stop you from doing something okay, or big developments like the demolition of Park Merced's 1,538 garden apartments built with courtyards built by Thomas Dolivar Church, where working-class families had raised children forever. And now they're going to build 50 high-rises. This was driven by Daniel Mudd, who was the CEO of Fannie Mae when he drove it into the ground to the tune of a $200 billion taxpayer rescue. And the so-called moderates in the city were accepting his promise to keep rent control. Well, the Costa-Hawkins Act shows that that you can't build new housing with rent control after 1978 or something like that. So even though they signed a developer agreement to say that we'll keep rent control, all they have to do is go to court and get rid of it. Now, you call this kind of thing NIMBYs. And what I really object to is this snide and condescending and sarcastic gut response to people whose homes were going to be destroyed, working class families with children raised safely in beautiful courtyards going to be put out on the sidewalk in a South of Market environment, and that the people who were trying, working with organizations like San Francisco Tomorrow, who've supported enlightened development for decades in this city, were trying to work against the forces of people like Daniel Mudd and his hedge fund, just because they wanted to get rid of rent control. Park Merced was the biggest collection of rent control housing west of the Mississippi. And to have your continual carping about the so-called progressives in favor of the so-called moderates, who I see really is more reactionary, pro-development, not caring about families, because this is what I find really annoying about your columns.
Well, Michael, let me give Chuck a chance to respond. I think Michael represents maybe some of the criticism you've gotten in your columns dealing with development in the past, Chuck.
Right. Well, I think that's true. I would just begin by saying that was great. I mean, there's so many cities in America that were trying to get, you know, the residents involved in important issues. And that is a great example of San Francisco, where you can find someone almost on any street corner who can give you chapter and verse about the issues that are facing the city. And that is what makes this a very cool city. You know, there's always a lot of hyperbole and a lot of rhetoric. I mean, the idea that moderates don't care about families or it's a sticky situation. This is one of the most expensive places on earth now. People are, in fact, being put out of their homes. That's definitely a fact. But I think you're looking at a boom economy, and that's kind of what happens. I don't want to be callous, but that's an issue. I didn't create it. I certainly am not throwing people. I'm not a landlord. I don't throw anybody out of a house. But yeah, it's a very difficult situation. I think we've covered that very well. I don't think there's any ignoring that situation.
Well, Michael, thanks for raising that. And Chuck Nevis, is there a column, a story, a judgment that you regret?
You know,
something you'd take back?
This is an odd one, and it may not even be what you want, but I think about it a lot. When I was still doing sports columns, I interviewed a pitcher named Warren Spahn. Warren Spahn's a Hall of Fame pitcher. He was in his 60s at the time, and just a very, you know, hail fellow well met, very nice guy. And in the course of us talking, we became more and more comfortable just kind of having a conversation. He had a lot of funny stories. And for some reason, at the end, he said, "Oh, let me tell you a funny joke." And he told me a joke that was inappropriate. It wasn't filthy, dirty, or terrible, but it was a sexist joke. And for whatever reason, I led the column with that joke that he did that. And I have regretted it ever since. And I have thought to myself, he was a perfectly nice guy. Why in the world did you highlight that thing? And I always hoped I'd see him. He passed away, unfortunately. I always thought, I'm sure he's forgotten it ever happened. But the little judgments we make, I'm writing three columns a week. A reporter's writing four or five times a week. We put things in. We write them. People come to me and say, "I loved your column last week. What was it again?" And I'll say, "I can't remember." But those little judgments affect people's lives, and you have to be conscious of that all the time. And I for whatever reason, I still regret the fact that I did that with Warren Spahn.
I've had people comment to me that it was really in your sports writing that they felt like you did some of your best work. Mm-hmm. When you were picked or, you know, tapped for the Metro column, were you ready to make that move? Do you miss sports writing?
First of all, no, I wasn't ready to make that move. And no, I don't miss sports writing just because it was fascinating. I mean, I thought it was just fascinating. The logistics of sports and the ideas of sports and the Olympic Games were just some of the great experiences of my life. I will never forget traveling to other countries and seeing these things and having these experiences. It was just sensational. But I did reach a point where I always joke that when I got to be twice the age of the athletes, that's when I started. And the idea of trying to get a 23-year-old guy to say something perceptive and you know, kind of prying these good quotes out of that person became more and more difficult. And frankly, politicians are much better at it. So they're, in a lot of ways, more fun to cover.
And the sports reporting, though, did give you, I think you've noted, what you needed to deal with the deadline pressures.
Absolutely.
Of being a Metro columnist.
Absolutely. The deadlines in sports are just crushing. And that is very quickly how you find out whether someone can be a sports writer or not, because it's coming up. And I had a friend once say, I said, how was the game last night? And he said, "I didn't have time to make it any good. I just had time to get it in. You know, I just had time to finish it. That's all I had time to do." And you literally may pick up the paper the next day and say, "I wonder what I wrote, because I did that so fast and trying to do that so quickly." But once you've done that, once you've looked that in the face and confronted it, a deadline isn't going to scare you again. You know, that's a deadline. You know,
tell the Bubba Paris story.
So, okay. Speaking of deadlines, one of the problems that we always had was Monday Night Football. Monday Night Football is a national event. I mean, everybody every football fan in America is watching on Monday Night Football. So you wanted to really do a good job. But the problem was the game started at 7. We had a 10 o'clock deadline, maybe 10:30. It was very tight to be able to get this thing in. So, and at the 49ers, at that time, we were in Candlestick. There was no elevator. You had to run down the steps, run down the bleachers, across the field, over to the locker room. So we did all that, and I get over, and for some reason we had to talk to Bubba Paris. And Bubba Paris is a 300-pound offensive lineman for the 49ers, enormous guy, biggest guy on the team. And we had to talk to him about something, and he said, I don't want to talk until I'm completely dressed, which is understandable. You don't want to stand there in your underwear. So, but he had a three-piece suit, and he wanted to put on everything. He wanted to put on, he was knotting his tie, he was buttoning up his vest, and I keep saying, Bubba, we really got to talk to you. We got a deadline. We really have to. And he's like, just a minute. And he's like tying his shoe. He's pulling his other sock. I said, Bubba, I'm serious. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, one of the real gifts that I have is I'm able to kind of sense the scene and know, you know, when you've gone too far. And I'm just playing this perfectly. And I said one too many times, oh, Bubba, honest to God, we got to talk to you right now. And he stood up. And he grabbed me by the shoulder and by the thigh, and he picked me up and he held me over his head like a barbell. And he said, I am not talking until I'm dressed. And I said, no problem. That sounds great. But I always remember the look on the PR guy's face when he came around the corner and Bubba has me held up over his head.
We're talking with San Francisco Chronicle Metro columnist or former Metro columnist Chuck Nevious. After 36 years, he has left the paper effective today. You have any thoughts about who is coming in to replace you, at least temporarily, David Talbot?
Yeah.
Known here as a lefty critic of the current city hall leadership, or at least the mayor in particular.
And me, actually.
Yes.
Not a fan of me.
You don't see it as a rebuke in any way, or
I told him about 6 weeks ago I was going to leave, and I was kind of trying to keep it quiet, but I didn't really realize it was going to be quite the shock that it was. Everyone was really surprised. And I said, I'll do 2 weeks. I'll give you 2 weeks notice. And first of all, they said, what can we do to keep you at the Chronicle, which was really nice. They made several different offers of different kinds of jobs that I could do or things I could do, but I'd really reached the point where I wanted to do it. And then they said, if you could you possibly stay till the 1st of December? So I said I could. So no, I think they definitely were hoping to keep me, and I understand that and appreciate that. The David Talbot thing, I think, is an attempt to kind of make a splash. And I'm all for it. I'm all for making a splash. I'll be really interested to see. And again, which we were talking about before, there is no telling what someone is going to be like as a columnist until they've done it for a while. Because, as I said, everybody has one or two. Everybody has one or two columns they could do. But let's see you do it on a daily basis. And it'll be interesting to see. And I have read, I know Randy Shaw, for example, does Beyond the Cron. And he was saying, you know, to be effective as a columnist, you have to be willing to take on your base. You know, I have to be able to criticize the mayor. I can't just support the mayor, or I'm not credible. And for David Talbot, who has some very strong progressive feelings, he has to also be able to look at the left and say, you know what, 9 times out of 10, I'm in your corner. This time, I disagree.
Well, Lester writes, hearing CW complain about how hard it was to work on Monday morning and the unrelenting pressure of 3 deadlines per week while simultaneously deriding homeless advocates who work hard for the cause they believe in despite not being, as Nevious puts it, elected or appointed, speaks directly to the kind of illogical Trumpian thinking Nevious seems to represent. And another one pushing back on your statements about the homeless, just because they are not here, so they're represented through our listeners. Chris writes, Mr. Nevious debunked the idea that he has any standing to discuss homelessness by assuming that homelessness begins with someone on the streets, and by assuming that once a person experiences homelessness, they are there forever, using charitable resources permanently. Homelessness has causes, and unless these are thoughtfully addressed, no significant progress can be made. Nevious's positions are thoughtless and foolish and did not deserve to be aired. Then you have another listener who writes, sorry you are leaving. Your columns expressed a balanced and moderate point of view. And then another listener who wants your thoughts on what explains the death of the Republican Party in California.
I don't know. one of my old editors, it's true. I mean, 3 columns a week is a lot for me. Excuse me. But as one of my old editors said, at least there's no heavy lifting. I mean, other people have much more difficult jobs. I'm not going to say that that's not true. And this is a job of privilege where, you know, I came from a really tiny paper in Colorado Springs, and I would go to press conferences and stand in the back of the room and take notes. And I came to San Francisco, and I was sent out to cover something. And I walked in and said, "Hi, I'm from the San Francisco Chronicle." And the guy said, "We have a seat for you right up front." You know, they'd reserved a seat for the major news organizations, and it made me realize that that's a big part of what you're doing. I started covering the Raiders when I came here, and I was going to make an impression. I was writing my little butt off. I was writing 4 days a week, 5 days a week. I was covering everything, and crickets. I didn't hear a word. I mean, people were like, okay. And that year, by a miracle, the Raiders made the playoffs. They went to the wild card. They won. They went to the next game. They won. They went to the championship. They won. And they went to the Super Bowl. And as they were getting ready to go to the Super Bowl, people would come up and say, your writing has really improved. And I realized it wasn't my writing. People were interested. You had a topic that people were interested in. And I think that's a big part of what you have to do. And obviously, like, homelessness is one that inspires passion. But I defy anyone to say it's not a difficult problem. And I defy anyone to say that they have a solution for it.
What is a community that isn't being covered by the Chronicle or other news media that you think here in San Francisco that you think really needs to be covered?
Well, that's a good question. I think that, you know, if there were one thing that I wish I had done more with, it would be teachers who are unable to afford to live in San Francisco. As a journalist, I went on and on about how unappreciated some journalists are. But I taught school for 4 years, and that was the toughest job I ever had in my life. And they're doing the Lord's work. And I think those teachers we need to really find a way to compensate them, and we need to find a way to make it possible for them to own and live in a house in San Francisco where they teach.
Let's hear from Ellen in Mill Valley. Hi, Ellen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Would like for your guest to speak to the whole notion of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comforted. I'm also a retired reporter after 40 years in journalism, and I would like to hear you speak to a concern among a number of us that the investigative reporting that is being done is not what we grew up in as a journalism tradition. I'm a relatively newcomer to California, and I've kind of know your column, and I'm pleased that you were there. I'm sorry that I got here so late. But would you speak to the whole notion of the dearth of investigative work?
Ellen, thanks.
Yeah. I think a lot of that goes back to the idea that newspapers are financially in trouble. I think the size of the newsroom is depressingly small compared to what it used to be. Many of you have probably seen the Chronicle building at 5th and Mission, and we used to have that entire building. And at this point, we have just the top floor, and we don't have all of that. So it's difficult to finance investigative journalism. As it happens, we are doing that, and we have put together a team that is doing investigative journalism. But I think you're absolutely right. That is not happening as often, and it's up to editors to find something when it's an everyday news story and say there's more depth to this. There's something more going on here, and we can do something more with this, and I'm going to free up that person to do that. It's just very difficult when you're just kind of feeding the machine every single day. We got to put this paper out, and it gets to be, if you're not careful, it gets to be a day-to-day grind instead of an investigative, illuminating profession.
Ellen, thank you for raising that. Karen in San Francisco. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a challenge for you. You were very instrumental in getting removed the Haight-Ashbury Neighborhood Council Recycling Center. And part of what was hoped would happen by some people in the neighborhood was that the homeless would be gone and that the Haight-Ashbury Neighborhood Council would disappear. But instead, what happened was some very low-income, low-skilled people lost their jobs. Small businesses are now required to retain and transport recyclables, which is a real hardship on small businesses. They don't have the space for that. There were Asian elders that brought their recyclables in to get a little bit of money for their families. If they do it now, they have to go a far distance. It impacted the city's ability to arrive at zero waste. And I would like to hear the good that it did.
Karen, thanks.
I think that, first of all, we do recycle on an enormous basis in San Francisco, one of the most successful cities in the United States for doing that. We have recycling bins at almost every home. That was a terrible location for a recycling center. It has been turned into a garden, which I think the residents and people who use the park have enjoyed a great deal. And I don't think anybody said that it was going to solve homelessness in Golden Gate Park. I've never heard that. I certainly never said that. And as far as Hank, it's more active than ever. I don't think anybody saw that as a death blow to them. That was a bad idea to have that there. I said it was a bad idea. They made it into a garden. I think it's terrific. And I don't see the problem with recycling.
Well, I think what is really coming out in these stories, it reminds me of something you wrote at the end where you said, all of it every day at this job made me who I am. I like to think I've made an impact. And part of the reason that you get such a strong reaction is because your columns did have impact in terms of shaping the way people think. And that with that comes a great deal of responsibility.
It does. And it again, it's one of those things where you didn't really realize. Life is what happens while you're making other plans. But yeah, to have people come up to me and say, you've been influential, I was just trying to write a third column. You know, I was just trying to get through the day. And you can criticize it or not, but you have to go with your gut reaction. And that's all you can do. And if you do, you can live with yourself.
Joe writes, poking the Bay Area smug bubble with a journalistic needle is a noble and worthy endeavor. And you did it with aplomb. Thanks for being one of the few grown-ups in the room. You'll be missed. You did a story column that talked about sort of the kindnesses in San Francisco. Can you just name one that really stood out to you in our last 30 seconds?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that did stand out to me was we had a story about a bus driver who a woman had left her purse on the bus and she stopped on the street, and the next bus that came up, she said, my purse is on another bus and I've lost it. And everybody on the bus got so involved in this thing. And the driver said, I can't do that. I was going to stay on my route. And everybody said, come on, help her out with her purse. I just think that you see that, those little kindnesses on the street in San Francisco over and over. They need to be saluted and awarded.
And hope there'll be more of that. His columns on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday are no longer, but he is around San Francisco. Chuck Nevious, former San Francisco Metro columnist.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegas Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.